Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, alongside Travis Anderson. Travis, middle of the week, and a lot went down yesterday as far as the national sports scene goes, but today, just a lot of baseball.
A lot of baseball, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that at all. In fact, just a moment ago, you and I were talking. Who went yard again today?
Ohtani ties it up with the Angels and the Indians game, bottom of the fifth. Simmons on base. Ohtani goes yard once again.
This guy the real deal?
I think so. I think the Angels found themselves a ball player.
I don't think anyone doubted that Ohtani was going to be good. But a lot of the time, you know, you see these guys come over here, Daisuke. I always bring up Daisuke. Tanaka. You know, Ichiro is a Hall of Famer. That's a little bit different. But there's a lot of guys that are a little bit overhyped. I think Ohtani's the real deal.
Early on, batting 455, but I think he is the real deal.
I do too, and I think it's a great spot for him to be in Anaheim, knowing that he can be the DH, play pretty much every day over there. It's a perfect situation for him. As far as other scores in the major leagues go, well, the Los Angeles Dodgers just continue to struggle offensively. I think it's fair to say that Justin Turner is missed.
Yeah, offensively, again, they're leaving a lot of runners on base. And again, like you said, Justin Turner out with that injury. They miss him big time because he's that guy. It's that spark plug.
He's a linchpin for that offense. Dodgers right now being shut out by the Diamondbacks in the ninth inning. 3-0 Arizona with the lead there. We go to the sixth inning right now. The Cleveland Indians and the Anaheim Angels again tied 2-2. Travis talked about it. Ohtani's shot tied that game up at 2. We'll keep you updated on that one. Finals from earlier today, the Atlanta Braves topped the Washington Nationals 7-1. Preston Tucker has been just blazing for the Atlanta Braves so far this year. Has a 3-run shot in this game. He's been good.
He's been really good. Like you said, had that home run in the first inning. And for Atlanta, they moved to 4-2 now. Washington, two straight losses now after their 4-0 start.
If you're a Braves fan, you got to be happy. You took, 2 of 3 from Philly and now 2 of 3 from Washington. I mean, that's not a bad start. And again, talking about Preston Tucker, the reason I mention him is because his offensive production may just keep Okuna in AAA for a little while.
Yeah, like you said, Tucker batting .429. His slugging percentage is .810. So the Braves have all that young talent. They built it the right way. They stripped it all the way down to the bare and built it back up.
Elsewhere in Major League Baseball, the Yankees topped the Rays 7-2. Severino got the victory today. He improves to 2-0. There was a talk last night because Yankee fans actually booed Giancarlo Stanton. Today, Stanton goes 1-for-4, has 2 RBIs. I can't believe that. Goes yard. His third home run of the season. Yankee fans are booing this guy. He took it in stride and said, you know, you strike out 5 consecutive times, you deserve to get booed. You don't boo a guy this early in the season. Come on.
No, he's the reason why you probably have a shot to win the World Series this year. You bring that guy over, so then you're booing him in his home debut. It's just, Yankee fans are dumb.
Yeah, expectations may be a little bit too high. But again, Stanton does some work. He goes yard, and the Yankees get the win 7-2 over the Rays. The Mets just recently topped the Phillies 4-2. Familia getting the save in that contest, coming in late. It was Houston defeating the Baltimore Orioles 3-2. Earlier today, Brad Peacock picks up the win on the mound for the Astros. The World Series champs now 6-1 to start off this season. 4 o'clock hour game, we have Minnesota taking on Pittsburgh. 5 o'clock, the White Sox are on the road against the Blue Jays. We get Seattle at San Francisco, and the Cardinals will take on the Brewers. 8 o'clock start time tonight, we have a couple of games. The Rangers will take on the A's, and then we get the Rockies and the Padres. John Gray on the mound for the Rockies. Clayton Richard will take the bump for the Padres. 1 game postponed today, Kansas City and Detroit. And so that's the only game that we're not getting in, at least at this particular time. Now, today on the show, we are going to talk local baseball. Coach Scott Mattson is going to join us next segment. We'll talk about the USU Eastern baseball team, who was off to one of their best starts in recent memory. They are 9-7 in conference play, tied for second place as we begin the second half of the conference slate this weekend. So we have more baseball talk coming up here in just a bit, and we'll dibble them some more Major League Baseball talk a little bit later on in the show as well. Travis, I do want to talk about the NBA. Last night, the Jazz pick up a huge victory. They topped the Lakers 117-110 in a game in which the Lakers' defense was nearly non-existent, and the Jazz took full advantage of it. And it was a massive win for the Jazz, because with that and a San Antonio loss, the Jazz move into number 4 in the Western Conference.
Yeah, the Lakers had a 10-point lead throughout that game, and just defensively, like you said, the Lakers struggled. Utah took advantage, got a huge win. Now tonight, if you're a Jazz fan, you root for the Lakers to beat the Spurs.
And the loss for San Antonio, you know what this means? It'll be the first time since a lockout-shortened season in 99 that the Spurs did not win 50 games.
Eventually, you knew that streak was going to come to an end.
It's a long time.
It's a long time, like you said. 1999... the shortened season, they won the championship that year, but to win 50 games from 2000 on is a good mark for the Spurs.
Right now, the Jazz 45-33. They own the tiebreaker over the Spurs, so they are the fourth spot. They have identical records. Oklahoma City, one game behind the Spurs and the Jazz in the loss column. Minnesota, one full game back of Oklahoma City, and the Pelicans right now a half game better than the Denver Nuggets as we get down to the final four games. Now, the Jazz, they have a huge game tomorrow. They'll take on the Los Angeles Clippers, and I do want to spend some more time talking about the Utah Jazz a little bit later on in the show, because I'll tell you, I like their first-round matchup with the San Antonio. If the Jazz get in as the four seed, I think they get to the second round. Now, what happens against Houston? I don't know, because the Jazz throw last night out because the Lakers play next to no defense. The Jazz have a hard time scoring. Defensively, they're going to be fine on the NBA playoffs, but you go up against a team like Houston, that could be problems. But we don't need to jump that far ahead. Right now, clinch a playoff spot. If they can have home court in the first round, what a success that is for Quinn Snyder, who should be coach of the year.
Yeah, we knew the Jazz would be able to be one of the top five or six defensive teams in the league. Offensively, we knew they would struggle, so you've seen that this year. So if they get the Spurs in the first round, yeah, they're going to beat the Spurs.
We're going to break for just a moment. We're going to give you the local sports rundown. And again, Coach Scott Mattson is going to join us from the USU Eastern Eagles here in just a moment. We'll come back, talk plenty more Drive Time Sports here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And the Carbon Dinos rallied to a 2-0 start in Region 14 play as they topped the Delta Rabbits 11-10 in a thriller last night in Helper. Carbon trailed 10-5 entering the bottom of the seventh inning, where the team went on a miraculous rally, scoring 6 runs to pick up the 11-10 win. In the victory, the Dinos were dynamic offensively. They finished with 11 total hits, and it was a 4 RBI night by Jaden Robertson that led the way. Robertson finished a perfect 3-of-3 at the plate while also scoring 2 runs. Nate Olson recorded the win on the mound for Carbon, as he worked a relief effort, pitching 2 innings, giving up just 1 earned run and allowing 3 hits while striking out 2. Triton Abeda also got some work on the mound. He struck out 6, and Jackson Leonard pitched 1 inning, allowing just 2 hits while also striking out 1. Now again, the win for Carbon improves them to 2-0 in Region 14 play. They'll return to the field this afternoon to take on Providence Hall in a makeup game that was originally scheduled for March 23rd. We stick with Carbon High School, but we move over to softball. And yesterday, the Lady Dinos scored 27 runs as they defeated South Sevier 27-9 on the road in a non-region tilt. And Carbon's offense was unbelievable in this contest. They totaled 31 hits and 24 RBIs. Leading the push offensively was Callie Fawcett, who went yard not once but twice. Fawcett also accumulated 8 RBIs, which led the team. Carbon also got a 7 RBI performance from Lindsay Madrigal. Now winners of 3 of their last 4, Carbon will return to the field on Thursday as they resume Region 14 play with a contest against the Delta Rabbits at home. Start time for that game is scheduled for 3:30 p.m. We move over to golf, and the Emory Lady Spartans returned yesterday following a week break. They did so by participating in an 18-hole match at the state course at Coveview in Richfield. Only 3 strokes ahead of Grand for second place entering the 7-team Region 15 contest. And after the 18-hole event yesterday, Emory had increased their lead to 59 strokes over third place Grand. Emory was again led by Laney Jensen, who shot a solid bogey golf at 91 on 18 holes. Freshman Sydney Alton had her best tournament so far this season. She finished with a 106. Now Emory will take the remainder of the week off. They'll return to the course on April 12th when they will hold their only home match of the season at 11 a.m. at the Millsite Golf Course. Taking a look at the final team totals from yesterday, it was Richfield shooting a 349 while Emory was in second at 424. San Juan finished in third, 475, followed by Grants, 480. Manti shot a 483, and South Sevier and North St. Pete rounded out the field. Outside of Jensen and Alton, Kayla Wynn shot a 110 for Emory, and Angie Nielsen donated the fourth score with a 117. Again, stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We'll have more on the Emory Lady Spartan Golf Squad in the coming days as we continue to follow their progress throughout the Region 15 season. There will be no other sporting events for Emory High School today as they are at spring break, but the Carbon Dinos have a slate. Again, baseball will be in action against Providence Hall at 3 p.m., and the tennis squad will play host to the Delta Rabbits. Start time for that contest is set for 4 p.m., and that'll be at the tennis courts located directly across the street from USU Eastern. And we move over to the national sports scene, where last night the Utah Jazz earned a monumental 117-110 victory over the Los Angeles Lakers. Now, the victory for the Jazz, paired with a loss by the San Antonio Spurs, means Utah is now the number 4 seed in the Western Conference as we get down to the final four games of the regular season. The Jazz currently hold the tiebreaker over the San Antonio Spurs and the Oklahoma City Thunder, while being one game up in the win column over Minnesota and two up in the win column over the New Orleans Pelicans. Now, the Jazz will continue the season in their final stretch. Up next tomorrow will be a contest with the Los Angeles Clippers, which could help the Jazz solidify potentially home court advantage in the Western Conference. You'll find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
There's no crying in baseball!
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things. Play ball!
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Holy cow!
More baseball talk here on Drive Time Sports. We're going to talk junior college baseball this particular segment. The USU Eastern Eagles right now in a three-way tie for second place in the Scenic West Athletic Conference. And they're starting the second half of conference play this weekend. They'll travel on the road to meet the Colorado Northwestern Spartans. This past weekend, USU Eastern had four games against Utah State's club team. Bye week in conference play, but they were still in action to try to stay sharp. Joining us right now over the phone to talk a bit about that, we have Coach Scott Mattson. Coach, a pleasure as always. Thank you.
Well, thanks for inviting me, Jordan. I always enjoy coming on.
Always enjoy talking with you, that is for sure, Coach. And there is plenty to get into because, I mean, as far as the baseball team goes, you guys have played great ball as of late, 17 and 15 overall. Most recently, you guys had, I guess we could call it a bye week, I guess. You guys went toe-to-toe with a club team, Utah State's club team. But the one thing I have to point out to people all the time, club teams can be deceiving because there's typically some athletes and some ball players on these squads.
There is. You know, they get a lot of junior college kids that don't move on after that can go up there and play for the next 2 years. So you're always going to have some talent on those teams. And, I mean, this last team, they're one of the better club teams. But, I mean, we should have done a little bit better over the weekend. But, you know, we played good, and it was a chance for everybody to get out there and try some new positions too.
Yeah, that was going to be my question to you. When you approach a club team in the middle of conference play where every game means something and then you have a weekend where things maybe are a little bit more light, I mean, how difficult is it to get the kids prepared for that while trying out new things?
You know, I just kind of use it as our approach for next week. You got to go out there and play your game or else they will beat you. And that's kind of what happened that third game that we ended up losing is we went out there and everybody tried to either strike people out or swing for the fence, and before you knew it, we were behind, and it was the end of the game. And then all of a sudden, we started doing it, and they saw the difference between when they stick with the game plan and all nine of them work together than one of them going out there trying to hit one run at a time over the fence.
You guys end the series, Coach, with a 15-0 win. You start it with a 4-0 win. I know those would probably be the team's two best performances over the weekend, but in a 6-5 win, I mean, of course, those games are always a little bit more thrilling, and sometimes you can pick up a lot of lessons in games like that as well.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we had to battle and kind of really work for those to get that win on the 6-5 win and come back and just kind of say, hey, you know what? We've got to start to play and play better defense. And that's something that I was excited about because we had that opportunity to have that stress put on us and get something out of this weekend, which was great. I mean, and these guys swung an aluminum bat where we were wood the whole weekend. And, I mean, a lot of our pitchers were getting upset with these little off-the-hands base hits that we gave up. And there was a lot of those over the weekend. But, I mean, those kids did a good job of swinging at pitches. And if we left it up, they hit it a long way. So,
well, in the final game, you guys only give up one hit, even with the aluminum bat. That's pretty impressive.
It is. You know, with Lionel Colon, he's been dominant. He's shut out Salt Lake early in the year and, you know, had a couple of rough weekends. This is exactly what I wanted to see him from this last weekend, is him go out and build that confidence and have success. And that's what he is. He has some of the best stuff in the league. He just kind of hit and miss with being in the strike zone, but he's done a good job this last week of really prepping himself. And, I mean, he said, hey, I really got to do some time. I want to go out and throw against these guys and work on stuff out there. And that's exactly what he did. And, I mean, he had success doing it.
What was the pitching like from this club team, Coach?
You know, it was slower than we normally see. There was a lot more off-speed pitches. And, I mean, every once in a while they'd run a kid out there that, hey, you know, he's like 83, 84, and he'd have a good curveball. And we oftentimes would take a fastball, try and get the one to hit out, and try and hit his curveball. And, you know, when it's good curveball is hard to hit, no matter who's throwing it and how hard it is. The pitching, I felt like, helped us to stay back a little bit more, learn to hit over the back leg a little bit. And that's kind of what we've been working on, even with going into Colorado. They throw a little bit more off speed than other teams do. And, you know, so it kind of helped us prep for this week.
Now, that was going to be my question. In comparison to Colorado, where are we looking at from a pitching standpoint? So you feel like these four games against this club team kind of mirrors what you'll see from Colorado?
Not exactly. I think Colorado has a little bit better pitching, but overall, I mean, those guys did a good job of attacking the ball on our pitchers. And that's exactly what Colorado does. They don't strike out a whole lot. They come right at you and put a lot of balls in play. But as far as the pitching, you know, there was a couple of kids that you could mirror that way. I think the game two starter that we ended up winning 6-5, that was as close to them as I think you're going to get.
Again, we're being joined right now by Coach Scott Mattson of the USU Eastern Baseball Team. Coach, as we go into the second half now of the season, the Scenic West Athletic Conference standings are a lot of fun right now because there's a three-way tie for second place between CSI Salt Lake and, of course, USU Eastern sitting at 9-7. This is as close as I can ever remember this conference. I know there's only six teams compared to what we were talking about in the past. You got the five teams instead of the six teams. But at the same time, I mean, to have three teams tied at this stage in the season, that's kind of unheard of.
It is, you know, I mean, and it's not, we've all mirrored each other. There's like CSI went and swept Southern Nevada, and that was huge going in. Southern Nevada has a little bit of a lead on everybody else, and it was kind of between us and Salt Lake, and CSI come out of there with four victories. I mean, that's big time. It's tough to go to CSI and play, but for those guys to do that, it helped us. It built our kids up because, I mean, they swept Southern Nevada knowing that we had beat them one time and we actually should have had a second win against them.
The first go-around is always so much different than the second go-around, Coach. And really, it was only CSI. That's the only team that got the best of USU Eastern in the first half of the season was CSI, and you guys still found a way to get a victory over that team. I mean, if we take this year's team out of the equation and we go back over the past 10 to 15 years, is this still the most competitive team that you've had in conference play?
Absolutely, hands down. These guys, they love playing the game, they love playing together, and they continue to do that and get better each week. And that's something that we're really trying to portray is, hey, we did have a good first half, but second half's a whole new ball game. They have charts on you, they have everything they need to go and pitch you, so we're going to have to make adjustments, and that's something this team's bought into and really pushed over the last few weeks.
I definitely don't want to make this a loaded question, but with that being said, is it talent? Is it attitude? Is it camaraderie? Is it a combination of all that makes this team the most competitive that you've had in conference play?
You know, I think it's a little bit of all. The one thing that's really shown, we've had some pretty talented teams in the past that, you know, they get out there and they kind of go for more strikeouts or they'll swing a little bit harder. This team knows they're playing for each other, and that's the one thing is if you come out and watch, these guys, they move runners over and get them in. I've never really had a team as good as this team at getting runners to third base and then just getting them in and sacrificing themselves to do that. I mean, we have high batting averages on our team that, hey, there are some guys that are going to hit the ball out of the yard, but they're really going for more doubles and singles rather than home runs just because we know for us to get on first base is helping our hitters. And that's kind of a philosophy we've had, is being on first base, pushing for second. We're always a threat to steal on first base. And that's, I believe that's really helped us this season, is having the speed that we have on this team and having that threat. We have a lot of pitchers that put a lot of effort into us on the base pass rather than us at the plate, which that's really helped us hitting.
If we talk about the hitting, there's one individual that really stands out, Coach. Jesse Rowley, batting .375 on the season, leads the team in RBIs, home runs, doubles. I mean, pretty much every major statistical category, including 36 hits on the season. How special of a year is he put together at this stage?
You know, he's just a fun kid to watch. He's worked his butt off for the last 2 years, really trying to get back in the swing of things. He had a rough start down there at the beginning, and we talked about that the other day. He should be hitting about .500 without those first couple of weeks down there. But he had a baby that first week, ended up missing, and he came on and really put together a good season. And more than that, he's turned into quite the leader for us, really setting the tone for the other guys. And we've had to move him. He was slated to be our right fielder going into the season, but we had some injuries, and so we've had to move him to third base. So he's playing a new position and still able to maintain that batting average, and what he's doing there, it's just exceptional young man that we have there.
You mentioned him having a baby. I mean, that's a human element that no analytic can really account for, especially at the college level. That's an experience that you don't coach too many kids, I'm sure, that go through that in the middle of the season.
No. And I mean, it was hilarious because we were getting close to our first weekend and she still hadn't had it. She was due on that Friday that we played. And he told me, he's like, hey, my wife says she'll come down there with us. And we kind of had to make that decision. You stay home with this baby because I mean, he wants to play and he wants to be around. But he's a great dad to that kid. And, you know, it's kind of part of our family now. So as a baseball team, everybody seems to come together and see that kid as, you know what, that's our baby. And it's hilarious because I think one of the first home runs he hit, the baby started crying in the stands right before he hit it. And then he hit a home run, then the baby cried the next inning, and he laid out and caught a ball at third base. So telling his wife to go pinch that baby every time he comes up to the plate, get a home run.
That's one of the unique things about baseball. Coach, you've been around the college athletic scene for so long. It just seems like baseball is a little bit different than the other sports as far as a team becoming a family. It just seems baseball to me always stands out in that realm.
Right. You know, we spend so much time together. Every day we're out here for 2 to 3 hours, and then on game days it's a 10-hour day for us, not to mention the bus rides with us. And these guys, that's key in baseball, is you got to have guys that like to be around each other just because they're around so much. And that's with this team, we never have that issue. Everybody gets along with everybody. I don't see cliques, and that's something that's, this is one of the first teams that I haven't seen. You always get your little groups in there that only hang out with each other. This team seems to be one solid unit.
Well, Coach, if we jump ahead to what is up and coming, I'm in a contest with Colorado, and this is a team that you guys swept in the early going of the season. You and I had talked about that following that sweep, first time in a while that you would earn a sweep over Colorado. They haven't won a conference game yet, but they've been close. I mean, they suffered a one-run loss to Salt Lake. I know at one point in time of the year, they've proven that they can put up runs. I think they put up 6 on Southern Idaho in one game. The term due, they're due for a win. I mean, is that realistic when you look at a team that's 0-16 that has shown that they have the ability to score runs and keep teams low in runs themselves? I mean, are they due for a win?
Absolutely. You know, he's been on the road for a long time, and Lou does a great job over there getting his team ready to play, and we're going to have to go over and play. I mean, we're trying to get a split on the road at least when we go over there. And this is a team that if you don't play well, they can easily take 4 on you. I mean, we saw that in the preseason where we had a few issues where we weren't exactly fielding the ball as well as we could, and they ended up beating us. We're actually one of their 4 losses from the four wins from the preseason, and they do a good job of playing defense and putting the ball in play. And they have one pitcher that, hey, he did a great job for him last year, was one of their best guys. And I mean, if he gets a chance, and he'll hold us down, if we can get 3 or 4 runs on him, it's going to be a good game for us. So we're going to have a quality start coming out of Jared that first game.
Is it one of the more difficult places to go on the road and get a win?
You know, it is. Anywhere's hard to play on the road because you're trying to get a feel for the new field. But these guys do a good job of playing at their place. It's an atmosphere like when people come into here, we have a good crowd, and they have a good crowd when we go over there. And it just seems like it's always quite the battle with those guys over there.
Well, Coach, it's always fun to get an update on the baseball team. I appreciate you once again making time for us. Best of luck as you travel to Rangeley, and hopefully we can talk again next week.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jordan.
Always fun to talk to Coach Scott Mattson and get an update on the USU Eastern baseball team. Again, they'll be in action this weekend on the road in Rangeley, Colorado. We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return.
This is Derek Favors, number 15 from the Utah Jazz. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
3-point game, Harris. Pick and roll it. Favors takes it strong and one. Oh my. Watch Derek Favors take a leap right here.
We're back on Drive Time Sports. Here's a weird topic. Nick Saban versus LeBron James. Have you seen this thing?
I have seen it, and so LeBron James now owns Barbershop Talk, according to him.
That's basically what's happening here. This is one of those stories that I know has been talked about on Twitter. Everybody on Facebook has had a conversation or at least an opinion about this as well. Quite frankly, I could not care less, but it is taking kind of an interesting turn. Alabama head coach Nick Saban has a new segment with Alabama, correct, where he sits down at a barbershop and he talks to Julio Jones.
Yes.
In a barbershop setting.
Yep.
It's called The Shop.
It's called The Shop.
Okay. Tell me LeBron James' complaint on this.
He feels that Nick Saban ripped him off because he has whatever his is called, Undisputed. Is that what it is?
Yeah, Undisputed. It had like 3 episodes a year ago or something, right?
So he feels that Nick Saban copied him and ripped him off. This has been going on forever. Like, I don't understand what LeBron's complaint is.
Yeah.
Is it just something LeBron has to just complain about everything?
I think so. I think that's kind of what I get out of it.
Like, he doesn't own Barbershop Talk. He doesn't.
And so he says that he sent a letter to the University of Alabama to stop this program. Nick Saban said he's never heard of his program, didn't even know LeBron James had something like this. No, they're not going to stop. LeBron fires back and says, well, I'll let my lawyers take care of it. Yeah, the original idea of sitting in a barber shop and talking wasn't invented by LeBron James.
No, this has been going on. You can go back way back. I mean, Barbershop Talk was way back in the day and talking about boxing or whatever it was in that case.
Well, it's Coming to America.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the joke in Coming to America, which came out when I was like 2 years old. It's just funny to me how LeBron James always finds himself in a situation, and look, at the end of the day, there's no legal ground for LeBron to stand on here. I mean, I've been looking into this. There's nothing that LeBron James can do about it. And quite frankly, it's kind of a dream scenario for both people, right? For both parties, because it's drawing attention to LeBron James, which he's very good at doing. LeBron is an expert at drawing attention to himself. And at the same time, now everybody knows that Nick Saban is going to sit down with Julio Jones and quote-unquote The Shop. So LeBron found a way to draw attention to himself, which again, he
always does.
He's awesome at that.
It always goes back to him.
He knows how to do that. I mean, that guy, I give him an A for effort when it comes to drawing attention to himself. And at the same time, both shows have gotten significant interest from people, right?
Yeah, there's been at least, 20 of these type of shows, and LeBron James comes out and says he respects him as a coach, but he'll be damned if he's going to allow someone to use that platform that he kind of started. Well, you didn't start it, dude.
You didn't start that.
So stop. Just stop being so petty.
We did Casual Friday here on Drive Time Sports 2 weeks ago with Coach Jones. It was basically barbershop talk is what it was.
Yeah, so hopefully he doesn't send us a letter.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, this guy, an expert at drawing attention to himself. I will say this much. LeBron versus Nick Saban. I never thought I would root for Nick Saban.
Yeah, I know. I'm with you. But I'm rooting for Nick Saban.
Because
Nick Saban exactly right. Everything he said yesterday was exactly on point.
LeBron James, what a special character that guy is.
Yeah, let's get this guy out of the playoffs quick.
I'm with you.
Get him out of there.
It's probably not going to happen, but I'm with you. Speaking of the NBA, again, I want to talk about the Utah Jazz. Last night, big victory. They topped the Lakers. The Jazz have played great basketball since the All-Star break. I mean, great, great basketball. Here's the question I'm going to ask. Remember when the Rockets won 22 out of 23 or whatever it was, and they had an early exit in the playoffs? Does this Jazz team feel different to you? Or
does
it feel about the same?
No, it feels different because if you go back to the first couple months, they were one of the worst road teams in the NBA. We talked about that. And I believe since January 1st, they are the best road team in the NBA.
You know, I get exactly what you're saying, because at the beginning of the season, we were talking about, well, if the Jazz could figure out how to win on the road, they were 3-12 on the road or something like that.
Yeah.
They would have been, they'd be fighting right now for the number three spot, maybe even competing with Golden State had they not started so sluggish on the road. I mean, they could be seriously fighting for a number two seed. And I view the Jazz in a lot different light than I view someone like the Portland Trailblazers, and this is no disrespect to Portland. I just feel like the Jazz are a more complete team, front to back. Dante Exum has not messed with the chemistry. I thought maybe that would be an issue for the Jazz. That is not an issue. Giving up points per game just over 100. You take a look at teams that are in the playoffs right now. Houston's giving up 104. Golden State's giving up 107. Portland's giving up 103. The only team better than the Utah Jazz in the Western Conference in points allowed per game is the San Antonio Spurs. That's it. Now, let me tell you why I don't think the Jazz will have a hard time with San Antonio. San Antonio doesn't like the scoreboard up offensively.
No.
That's a good matchup for the Jazz.
Yeah, I like that matchup. It plays perfectly into what Utah does. Defensively, they can lock down the Spurs, and you know the Spurs are not a team that's going to blow you away with points.
Now, with that being said, out of all teams in the Western Conference, there's only one team that averages less points per game than the Jazz. Can you name that team?
Spurs?
Spurs. That's it. So the Jazz are going to have to figure that out. I know on the offensive side of the ball, you got to score points in the NBA playoffs. You know the old saying, defense wins championships? I don't necessarily agree with that. I really don't. You have to be able to get it done on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, you do.
You have to score points.
You have to score.
And I think that's even more true in the NCAA tournament. And we've talked about that. That's why Villanova has won two out of the last three national championships. They can score points.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit different format, I know, because it's a one game, one and done type setting, and you're playing the course of that one and done tournament over the course of 2.5-3 weeks. So I get it. It's different. But to a certain extent, that carries over into the NBA. You have to be able to score points.
Have to. Yeah, I'm with you with the whole defensive win championship thing. No, you have to do it on both sides. You have to score, and you have to score a lot of points. And we've seen that from the Warriors, who score a ton of points, and they've won, what, two championships out of 3 years?
Right.
Yeah, you have to score.
I don't want to take too much of a sample size from last night's game, but here's something to consider. The Jazz scored 117 against the Lakers. They scored 121 against Minnesota. They scored 107 against the Grizzlies. Lost to the Celtics, in which they just scored 94 points. But before that, they scored 110 against Golden State. They scored 120 against San Antonio. So while this team has not been that great offensively throughout the year, you take a look at what they've been able to accomplish over the last month, and they're figuring out offensively. They're starting to score points. That's why this team seems real to me. That's why this is a team that I think can actually do some damage once they get into the postseason. Now, Ricky Rubio is starting to look like Ricky Rubio post-All-Star break last year for Minnesota.
And that's why we were both high on it.
Right.
And I know a lot of people are like, well, he can't score. Well,
He did last year after the All-Star break.
It just wasn't true. It was just not a fair assessment of Ricky Rubio to say that the guy can't score, because he can.
He scored 23 against Minnesota. Shot 9 of 14 from the field. That's pretty efficient. You're going to take that 10 out of 10 times. And again, I don't want to take too much from the Laker game last night, because the Lakers just did not play defense.
No Ingram, no Ball. It's been kind of an up-and-down season for the Lakers. The Lakers actually had the lead multiple times in that game, but defensively, the Lakers have been a bad team all year.
But once again, Ricky Rubio was really good last night.
No one could stop him.
He had 31 points, shot 10 of 16 from the field. And so I think you can slice this and dice this as much as you want. I know that Donovan Mitchell is going to get the majority of the attention, and rightfully so. This kid has put together a brilliant rookie year. But don't overlook the fact that the pairing with Ricky Rubio is ideal for Donovan Mitchell. Ideal, especially when Rubio is scoring the basketball. Those two go together so well. And I thought going into the year it was going to benefit Rodney Hood. That's who I thought would have been the biggest beneficiary of the Jazz acquiring Ricky Rubio. Pass first point guard. He'll spread the floor. It's going to open up driving lanes and scoring lanes for Rodney Hood. Didn't work out. They ship him out. Even more opportunity for Donovan Mitchell, and it's worked.
Yeah, Mitchell's benefited, like you said, like how we expected Rodney Hood to. And it gets Mitchell into good spots on the floor where he's not forcing a lot of jump shots. He's getting into his rhythm, into his flow, and he's knocking down those 15 to 20 footers.
Now, Mitchell, of course, he's a rookie, averaging 20 points a game, but I want to look at the last 10, because as we get down to the final week of the season, the NBA, that's a grind. It's an 82-game season, and you don't see too many rookies that make it through an entire 82-game season without suffering some sort of injury. So first off, I want to give a nod to Donovan Mitchell on his durability because he has played in 75 games.
That's impressive. He's took on the bulk of the load for that team, and he hasn't wore down. You expect those rookies to hit that rookie wall, and he hasn't.
Okay, over the last 10 games, and it's still in doubt, the Jazz could still technically miss the playoffs, but over the last 10 games, it has been a playoff push, a massive playoff push, because you could go from anywhere to 4 all the way down to 10 with 2 or 3 losses.
Yeah, look at the Denver Nuggets, for example.
Exactly. Okay, so dissecting what Donovan Mitchell has accomplished with the Jazz over the last 10 games. He's shooting 44% from the field. Why is that significant? Well, it's up over his season average, shooting 43% from the field. So he's up there. Listen, this gets better. I know that's a very slim increase. He's averaging nearly 25 points a game. That's 5 points more than what he's averaging for the entire season. This is over the last 10 games when it's mattered most.
Field goal percentage goes up, points go up.
That's what's impressive to me. Typically, when your points go up, it's very easy for that field goal percentage to drop.
Because you're forcing more shots. Right. You're taking more jumpers.
He's increased it. Assists per game. He's averaging 3.5 on the year. He's now averaging 4 points or 4 assists per game over the last 10 contests.
And he's never going to be that guy that's going to wow you with the assist. That's just not his game.
No, but he's still averaging 4. He's managed to increase
and
4
is a good number. I expected that number to be anywhere from like 2 to 3, and he's up at 4.
And he's averaging about 4 rebounds per game, which is there on his season average. So, again, Donovan Mitchell's numbers have increased over the past 10 games. And I don't know that there's an analytic formula that can calculate this kind of stuff, but at the same time, he's a rookie that has never gone through the grind of an NBA season. The Jazz have played meaningful basketball all year long. These last 10 games have been near must wins for the Jazz, and Donovan Mitchell has increased his numbers.
Yeah, they took care of business. After that Hawks game, you were like, oh, here we go. But they went on the road in Minnesota and walloped them. So yeah, the Jazz are making the playoffs, and I expect them to nab that 4 seed when it's all said and done.
Okay, now we'll look at Ricky Rubio over the last 10 games. Because again, these two go together so well. Rubio for the year is averaging 13 points per game. Over the last 10, 19 points per game. Okay, his field goal percentage for the year, 41%. Over the last 10 games, 47%.
Keeps going up.
That's what it is. Look, this team, to me, it's simple. Ricky Rubio and Donovan Mitchell will take the Jazz as far as they can go. If these guys are playing to the level that they're playing at right now, the Jazz will get out of the first round, and the Jazz will cause some noise in the second round. I don't think they get past Golden State or Houston, but at the same time, they can push a series. They can make it a hard 6-game win for a team like Houston or Golden State.
You know, with the Warriors and their injuries, you never know. I mean, maybe Curry isn't back. And if Curry's not back, the Jazz could push him. I'm not saying they're going to win.
It's possible, yeah.
But they will push them, and they will give them everything that they want.
And I'm not discrediting anyone else on this team. I'm just saying when you take a look at what the Jazz are, what they can accomplish, to me it's in the backcourt. The pairing of Rubio and Donovan Mitchell is so big. And over the last 10 games, these guys have just been absolute studs. And because of that, the Jazz have climbed all the way to the number 4 spot. And again, I'm using the last 10 games because the Jazz could have very easily found themselves on the outside of the playoffs looking in had things gone wrong. And still right now, I know that they're 3 games up on the Clippers, who are the 10 seed right now with the Western Conference, 2 games up on the Denver Nuggets. Without this kind of backcourt production, very easily could have been flipped.
Yeah, they could have been out and looking up, and the season would have been a wash.
Jazz have won 7 out of their last 10 as well. They've won 3 in a row in the Western Conference. Huge, huge victory last night against the Lakers. We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return.
In 5, 4, 3, 2.
I'm Joe Wade Formicola, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Real name, no gimmicks.
On 750 AM, KOAL.
So I came to the grave.
We're back on Drive Time Sports. Final segment of the day. Here's another weird tidbit for you. Do you know you can get kicked out of the Masters as a spectator for yelling dilly dilly?
Can't have any fun at the Masters, huh?
That's a real thing. That stupid beer commercial, which I gotta be honest, I know it kind of swept the nation, the whole dilly dilly thing.
Has it died down yet?
I never thought it was that funny.
I don't really get it.
I don't either. But if you shout dilly dilly at the Masters, you will be removed from a security guard. There are some other phrases that will be removed as well. There's a lot of golfers that have complained about fan reactions at tournaments. There was Justin Thomas. He had a fan ejected at a tournament in late February. Then he said he overreacted. But the spectator apparently yelled, "Get in the bunker," at him. Yes. And he had that guy removed.
I seen that when he yelled, "Get in the bunker," and he took exception to that, which, come on, dude.
He had previously complained about fans yelling during golfer swings. And then last month, Sergio Garcia had a fan ejected. Rory McIlroy said he needed ibuprofen after being in a group with Tiger Woods because of exuberant fans. He said, well, he also had a fan ejected for yelling his wife's name, which, okay, maybe I can see that one a little bit more.
That one, yeah.
Maybe. I mean, that's a personal taunt.
But get in the bunker.
Come on.
Really?
That's actually pretty funny. I like that. I like that more than dilly dilly. But if you yell dilly dilly after someone puts in an 18-foot putt, you're gone. They remove you from the Masters.
Can't have any fun at the Masters.
You can't have any fun at golf tournaments in general.
No, those guys take their swinging seriously.
You know, and I've talked about this on the show before, and I'm not taking shots at the sport of golf. I'm just saying it's a little odd to me that Bryce Harper can walk to the plate in Atlanta and they'll play Go Cubs Go because the Cubs are one of the teams that will take a run at Bryce Harper this free agency, and they knew that. So they're taking a personal shot at Bryce Harper, right, in a free agency to be story. Bryce Harper doesn't say anything. People are yelling. I mean, you got 30,000 people screaming and yelling with a pitcher throwing a ball 90 miles an hour in his dome as people are taunting him. Oh, you were just talking about one of the taunts in Cincinnati.
Yeah, he stepped to his weight in Cincinnati, and it's all quiet, and you hear one idiot yell, "Overrated," right when he's getting ready to swing.
Whack. How'd that work out?
Yeah, he hit a home run. He hit two.
Right. The point I'm trying to make is golf, and that's the problem I have with golf, I guess, to some extent. Look, I like golf. Don't get me wrong.
Well, it's a great sport, but come on.
Dilly-dilly.
You can't stand there and hit the ball. Like, you have to have it quiet. The ball's not moving.
This is taking it beyond that.
Yeah.
You can't yell dilly-dilly even when people are clapping and they're going to kick you out of the Masters.
You can't yell get in the bunker. That one's awesome.
Yeah.
Because we're always listening.
He's not rooting for Justin Thomas.
You're always hearing get in the hole, so this time he's like, get in the bunker.
Yeah. Don't have fun at the Masters. That's the point of the story, right?
Yeah, you can't have any fun.
Out of time on this edition of the show. It's always fun to sit here and bicker about sports with you. Coming up next, it's the Michael Medved program. I want to thank Coach Scott Madsen for taking out the time. We're over the hump. Tomorrow, it's the Thursday edition of the show. We'll be back live in the studio with you. He is Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.